But right now, don't forget about this NFL season, Tony Gwynn Jr.
No.
Next week, training camps start. Let's get excited. Joining us for a Radio.com insider, Brian Baldinger on the SDCCU fan hotline. Brian, thanks for the time. Appreciate it. How are you today?
Well, Chris and Tony, I'm doing great, man. It's good to be with you. I'm actually going to be out there at Chargers camp week from Sunday, the 28th. Okay. Practice starts at noon. I'm looking forward to seeing the Bolts and what they have this season, and I'm really excited about them.
What are some of the storylines you are most excited about heading into this 2019 season? Is it certain teams? Is it some of the rule changes? Is it a little bit of both?
I mean, just to the Chargers itself. I mean, just the drama that's unfolded here in the last couple of days about Melvin Gordon and see how that gets handled. I mean, Jadeveon Clowney and Melvin don't look like they're going to come to camp, although we haven't heard from Jadeveon yet, so I'm not sure. But, I mean, you always kind of worry about star players and Pro Bowl players and contracts and all that kind of stuff. So we'll see how they get worked out. But I don't know, like in the AFC, can anybody challenge the Patriots? Right. I mean, I thought the Chargers could, and they went up to Foxborough, and, you know, and the game was over in the first 30 minutes. So, you know, I mean, and so if you look at that game, if you go, okay, that's where the Chargers season ended, you go, what happened? You go, well, I mean, the offensive line just did not perform, and they couldn't protect, and, you know, I mean, it was just it was dysfunctional. So, I mean, you know, in a big game, to be able to handle twist stunts that the way the Patriots gave them to them, the way they did throughout the postseason in Kansas City and then in the Super Bowl against the Rams, I mean, nobody could handle them.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I would, if I was, you know, Anthony Lynn and you know, I was looking on that side of the ball, I'd be, you know, be working on those twist stunts all year long and all training camp long.
Brian, it was announced that Tyreek Hill will not receive any suspension from the NFL and you know, and that it was also the case as it pertains to charges off the field. It seems like the police department said there wasn't enough evidence. Do you agree with the NFL's decision based on all of that?
Well, it's hard to know, Tony. It's hard to know just what we don't know.
Right.
I mean, you know, I mean, obviously the allegations that came out, you know, immediately, you know, they were stunning. And, you know, it was, you know, you would think, okay, he was never going to play again. I mean, the Chiefs were preparing for it. I mean, they went out and got, you know, a player from Georgia to sort of replace him. But, you know, I mean, that's why you got to just play out this whole process, you know. And he does have a history, obviously. And, you know, he had a history at Oklahoma State. He had a history early in his career at Kansas City. So that was working against him. But at the end of the day, he did not do anything to his son. And so regardless of what came out of a conversation, we don't know any of the context of the conversation. We haven't really listened to the whole thing. And so that's what the investigation is about. They got to find out if there's any fire where there was smoke. And, I'm fine with the due process. We have seen the league now kind of screw these things up, too. So yeah. I'm not saying that, you know, they're perfect. So I understand the question fully, Tony. But I don't know that we're going to get any more information about what happened. And if we don't, then we got to kind of just trust the process, I guess.
Yeah. Brian Baldinger is with us from the NFL Network, Radio.com Insider, talking a little NFL football. Can't wait for the season to kick off, training camps next week. Brian, what do you think about the new pass interference being reviewable rule? Tony brought that up when we were talking the other day, and I think it's going to be interesting. I hope that teams and, you know, don't use it the wrong way, but I always have a feeling with these things that it's going to take some getting used to.
Well, you know, the adjective interesting, that's just that's a mild adjective here, Chris. I mean, this thing, I mean, we sat in seminars with Al Riveron, the director of officiating, and I mean, just trying to get the explanation out, there was a million questions.
Yeah.
And what ifs. And so we can play that game, and that's what we should do. But we're not going to know till, you know, September 4th or September 7th or 8th. I mean, it's gonna blow up. It's going to blow up in a way that nobody saw for its intent to blow up. But it's going to happen. And so we're going to be here next year revisiting it again, I think. I don't think this is going to be a clean. Right. It's very, very difficult to understand all the different things. They're saying right now at the end of the Chargers-Kansas City game that, you know, the catch or non-catch in the back of the end zone would be reviewable, and it wouldn't be a touchdown for the Chargers. I mean, it's you go and you try to say, okay, let's play this game, and that's what we did. We played a game. Catch, no catch. Foul, no foul. We played this game, and we couldn't get it right. We couldn't get a consensus. We have a lot of smart football people in the room.
Yeah.
At the NFL Network, we could not get a consensus, Tony, on it. So it's not if, it's when it's going to blow up, because it's going to.
Yeah, this just seems like it has all the makeups of getting really messy.
I'm kind of looking forward to it, because I like when things get a little out of hand.
You're right,
in the
Chris.
NFL.
It's going to be, look, for our business, your business, it is going to be, they're going to put it on a silver platter for you.
Yeah, they are.
You know?
Yeah.
So you're going to have a lot to chew on Sunday nights and Monday afternoons and Monday nights.
Brian Baldinger joins us here on the SDCCU Fan Hotline, radio.com, sports, and NFL Insider. We talked a little bit about the Patriots, and you know, it's hard to wrap our mind around anybody beating them at this point. You know, we watched the Chargers. I think a lot of us thought the Chargers could go up there, and it was
at least hang with them.
It was apparent really early that wasn't going to be the case. Is there a dark horse team that can take down the Patriots, you think, in the AFC?
Well, I mean, like I guess we all want to see what Cleveland's going to be. We know that they're paper tigers right now. We know that, but at some point, it may not happen week one or week two. But at some point, either the Cleveland Browns are to come together, and they're going to be a formidable unit and a tough out, or they're not. But nobody knows.
Right.
We don't know how they're going to respond to Freddie Kitchens. We don't know. I mean, they have played a lot of dummy head football. Even during last year against the Raiders, I mean, just did some stupid things to lose games. Do they lose? You know, do they stop swallowing that stupid pill and play smart football? Because that's what you have to do to compete against the Patriots. You cannot beat yourselves.
Yeah.
You will never beat that team if you're beating yourself. I mean, it's hard enough to beat them as it is. But we got to see. I mean, they got a lot of talent. They got a lot of weapons. They got a young hotshot quarterback that I love. We got to see what Patrick Mahomes does in his third year. I mean, those two teams look like they may be able to score a lot of points. And I think the Chargers are going to be every bit as good, if not better, than they were last year. So, I mean, is there a dark horse team? Can the Baltimore Ravens, with this Lamar Jackson, can they get to the postseason playing like they did at the end of the season last year? You know, I mean, and does he get better? Because if your quarterback can't play at a high level, then you're not gonna get to the postseason. You're not gonna be any good in the postseason.
Brian, one more thing for me. I wanted to ask you, what do you think about Kyler Murray in Arizona, and also about the college coach Cliff Kingsbury moving into the NFL without really gigantic college credentials? I mean, other than the fact that everybody thinks he's a genius, they will probably won't think that if Arizona starts losing some games. He's in a tough situation. How do you think that's going to play out? Because I think that's going to be fun to keep an eye on.
Well, I'm a big fan of both. I do Big 12 games on Saturdays for Fox, so I have been to Oklahoma. I'm a huge fan of Kyler Murray and what he did a year ago. I thought he would win the Heisman. He did. I'm a fan of the person and the player. I want to see Kyler in Cliff's offense. We know that he has coached Baker Mayfield. He has coached Patrick Mahomes, and we've seen what those guys have done early in their careers. I don't think – now, he's got to coach a lot more than the quarterback. I mean, he's got 53 guys he's got to coach. I think it's going to be an uphill and an upstream battle for Cliff. But I'm pulling for him, and I'm just like you. I want to see him in training camp. I want to watch all the preseason games. I want to be in the film room on Monday mornings watching what they're doing. Because, let's face it, Cliff has not run an offense. He's been at Texas Tech for 6 years. I haven't seen him run an offense with a tight end on the field. Now, you can't do that in the NFL. So I got to see how he adjusts, and he has to adjust. And I got to see this coaching staff that he knows very little about, how he puts that together and how they perform for him.
Interesting stuff. Brian Baldinger from the NFL Network and radio.com Football Insider. Thanks so much for your time. Hey, Brian, we'll give you a call as soon as the pass interference rule starts to mess
okay.
up. We'll
be on the speed dial for that one, all right?
That would be great.
Thanks, Brian.
I'm ready for it right now.
Have fun this preseason. Right. We'll see you. Talk to you soon. Thanks so much.
My pleasure, Chris Tone. Talk to you soon. Bye.
All right.
It's now time for the most unpredictable, most wacky, most opinionated segment of the show.
I wouldn't brag about it.
Gwen and Chris talk about the best of the rest.
Great balls, you fire!
Ooh, with a twist.
Personally, I think we got hosed on that call.
The Big Five begins right now.
Don't panic, but there's absolutely nothing to worry about.
On 97.3 The Fan.
Okay, before we get started with our Big Five, my bad, I forgot to mention Sam Pay.
Oh, man, don't forget
Sam. Sam Pay, you are our biggest fan. You have 10 minutes to call us back at 833-288-0973 to win tickets to see the San Diego Padres host the Baltimore Orioles on July 29th at 7:10 and also be entered into our grand prize, a Vegas road trip to see Shania Twain at Planet Hollywood. Make sure you sign up at 973thefansd.com/biggestfan to enter. Scraby.
Thank you, Tony, for that. That was very nice of you to send it over to the Big Five desk over here.
Mm-hmm.
No, I actually got one of these topics from someone on Twitter, so I never don't know why I've never thought about this, but if you'd like to submit some stories for the Big Five, you can send them to me at Matt Scraby on Twitter, or you can send them to Tony Gwynn Jr., at Tony Gwynn Jr., at ChrisLOSD. I don't know Thomas's.
I don't know how to access it, so don't send it to me.
Send it over to me and say you want to hear it in the Big Five, and if it works, we'll put it in there. All right, let's get to it.
Oh,
number five.
I can't wait till you hear this question, Chris.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Chris likes to hear the questions live on the
air. Yeah, I don't read them ahead of time.
But this one was pretty good, and I knew immediately I had to ask you guys this because Tony's already laughing up a storm. Aaron Boone's ejection yesterday came with much fanfare because it was pretty awesome. I think I watched it, I'm not joking, maybe 100 times last night. And the way he delivered it was just mastery. The video out there, you could see the subtitles and everything. He received a one-game suspension because of it, but I also saw comments on the post from people asking why it's okay for Aaron Boone to verbally abuse someone in the workplace. And the question was then brought up, if we are evolving as a society, shouldn't Major League Baseball evolve as well? Saw comments from parents as well asking how this helps teach kids to handle different situations. So, Chris, do you think the way a manager deals with an umpire should evolve?
Do not govern your kids the same way Major League Baseball managers govern their players and talk to umpires. There is a difference. There's a separation. Figure it out. What Aaron Boone did yesterday was pure entertainment, pure enjoyment to watch. I don't take it any other way. You're reading way too much into it if you're worried about protecting your kids. Don't worry about it. I think they can tell the difference between a baseball manager getting mad at an umpire and, quote, real life.
Devil's advocate. What if a kid sees Aaron Boone, he's sitting in the front row, he hears him do all this, and he talks to an umpire
and he's forever doomed because what? He heard a bad word?
No, because then he's going to go take it back to the Little League field.
Then that's on the parents.
I mean, teach your kids right.
I learned stuff from my mom and dad, not from other players.
Yeah, if you're learning from Aaron Boone, or you're in trouble. But I loved it. I thought it was funny. I thought it deserved way more than a one game suspension. Show the guy some respect. Give him five or six games for that. That was a work of brilliance. And
you're having a tough day right now. I feel bad for you.
He was fantastic in that sequence. You watched it 100 times.
I watched it a lot.
I watched it 50 times, too. And so did just about everybody. And look, you're right. It doesn't belong for kids. But, God, if your kids don't know the difference, then you're not doing a good job.
That's Tony, Gwynn Baseball, you deal with little kids all the time. What do you think?
There's a difference. I think there's a difference. You want to set the example by how you play the game, you know, your sportsmanship. I think, listen, when it comes to managers, there's just, like Chris said, there's a separation. There's a difference between big leagues, college, high school, Little League.
I mean, I'm assuming Earl Weaver did not yell at his kids the same way he yelled at umpires.
Right. I think there's a clear difference, and I think as parents, our job is to decipher guidelines.
Yeah.
Put the railings out there for them. You know what I'm saying? So I didn't have a problem with it. I thought, as Chris said, it was pure entertainment. Matter of fact, we don't really get those anymore. Like, this was one of those rarities. And part of the only reason why people are feeling like this umpire got bullied is because he was one of the younger umpires. I promise you, if that was Angel Hernandez, nobody would be talking about anything to
Everyone
do with
been yell more.
Exactly. It's all about who the umpire was and how he was receiving what Aaron Boone was given.
Does it surprise you that I slightly think that Aaron Boone maybe was a little bit too over the top?
He was.
No. I think Aaron Boone would tell you. Okay. I was over the top. Right. But you know who loved it? You know who got the most points from? Those Yankee players
in
that dugout.
True.
100%. They came in after that win and were looking straight for their manager when they walked in.
I actually really have a problem with Brett Gardner. That was a psychotic episode of whatever he was doing.
Have you seen Brett Gardner?
No, not okay, do that.
Do you remember him busting his own lip after?
I do. Okay, I do.
This is right along those lines.
He did that
Brett
about
Gardner.
A month ago.
Yeah.
I was like,
he had to get like 3 stitches.
What is he doing? He's hitting his bat everywhere. It almost broke the roof.
That's light work, man. I play with some pure psychos after outs.
I love that.
Here's the thing, real quick on that. Just one more thing on Aaron Boone and his actions and how it might affect others. I really don't think it's going to affect any kids, but there probably are a couple of little league coaches out there and pony league coaches 100%. Who are going to think, oh, that's the way I need to do it because this is the most important thing in the world.
We will see
you
it.
People get a hold of yourselves too. Because I'm a little worried about that.
It's not the kids that we need to worry about.
No,
it's
we don't
adults.
Have to worry about the kids. We got to worry about some adult somewhere who's coaching a little league team who's going to take it to the extreme one day and pull an Aaron Boone. And that's when you're going over the board.
Over under 50% chance we see something on Instagram with high school,
oh yeah,
little league, some type of coach trying to do something like this.
I'm taking over under 100%.
Right.
I just loved how he said, "You're having a bad game, and I feel bad for you."
That's how you know he knew. He was totally aware of what was going
on. He kind of prefaced it like, "I'm going
to
go a little
I'm about
too
to go in on you right now. Just brace yourself."
I like the player too. He's like, come on, man. That's way outside. Way outside. It was kind of crazy how much you could hear of this whole exchange.
They had that mic hot.
I don't know how they did all that.
Yeah.
Number 4.
And I don't think Aaron Boone knew how they did all that either.
The two teams that lost the Kawhi Leonard sweepstakes.
Also, real quick, would he have gotten suspended if nobody had the audio of him?
Yeah, here's why.
He would have? Okay. Because every baseball manager, I'm sure Tommy Lasorda used to do that every single time he argued.
He would have got suspended because that report gets written up.
Okay.
The home plate umpire would have had it. The first place umpire would have had it. The third. They all would have been saying the same thing, and Joe Torre would have had no choice but to suspend him a game anyway.
All right. He said number 4.
Oh, the two teams. That's right. I started it. Sorry. Two teams that lost the Kawhi Leonard sweepstakes didn't take too kindly to how the reigning NBA Finals MVP conducted his free agency. Per ESPN's Brian Windhorst on his Hoop Collective podcast, the Lakers are upset because they feel like, quote, they got played by Kawhi. Windhorst noted the Raptors were also unhappy because Leonard, quote, came in, asked for the sun, the moon, the stars, then left them at the altar. ESPN's Ramona Shelburne also reported as late as 9 p.m. Pacific on July 5th that Kawhi asked the Lakers to delay officially consummating their trade for Anthony Davis until as late as Sunday, July 7th, which would hold up their cap space in the process. 2 hours later, he announced he would be going to the Clippers. So let's take him for their word that this happened. Tony, is Kawhi Leonard in the wrong for the way he handled this?
No. Kawhi Leonard yielded all the power. And they were, and this is including my squad, they were more than willing to wait it out. And you run the risk of him knowing exactly where he wants to go. Especially if you think about it from Kawhi's standpoint, right? He has a chance to sign with one of the teams in the Western Conference. He knows the other team. He probably pretty much knows the other team's plan, exactly what they want to do. Mm-hmm. And he already knows in the back of his mind where he wants to go. Why not play a little gamesmanship here? Have him hold it up. Maybe they lose out on a guy. But that's what having the power of being the best free agent on the market yields. And so as much as it pains me and it hurt my squad, the facts are the facts. He earned the right to be the best player. He earned the right to be the guy who's calling all the shots in free agency, and he executed it masterfully. That's all you can really say about it. And everybody should be mad. You know, hey, you got played. That's kind of how it goes, man. That's what happens in real life, too.
Yeah, I don't know how else he could handle it other than to make you feel like you were played. I mean, he's got to pick somebody in the end. It's kind of like if, you know, three guys are going out with the same girl, two of you are going to be left aside at the end. So just figure that out. And if you're going to go after Kawhi Leonard and you're the Raptors and you're the Lakers and you're the Clippers, then two of you are going to lose out in the end. He can't play for everybody. I don't know how else he was supposed to handle that to make the Lakers and Raptors feel better.
I get them being upset about him asking to hold up the trade, especially if he already knew where he was going to go even before that. I get that part. But still, I mean, that is still the risk you take. Yes, is it a clean free agency move? Probably not. It's probably not, but it's not against the rules.
I don't think the Lakers were all that interested in how the Pelicans felt about signing Anthony Davis away from them, so now they're upset because what? A different free agent didn't.
Let's slow down there. He didn't sign with the Lakers. They traded a whole bunch of stuff for it.
Yeah. Get your facts.
I know. I don't like facts when they get in the way of a good comment.
Yeah.
You're not the only
number three.
Tiger Woods, y'all. He missed the cut at the Open Championship in Ireland, and he said that he was not in the best physical health. He said he was sore, and he asked when he will next play. He didn't have an answer and wants to get away from the game. Here he is in post-game, I guess you can call it, from Ireland this morning.
I just have to continue to do what I'm doing. You know, I've gotten so much stronger over the past year, you know, working with my physios and trying to get my body organized so that I can play, you know, at a high level. And, you know, it panned out. I won a major championship this year.
I have so many thoughts, but I'm just going to keep going. After doing the impossible and winning the Masters in April, he has struggled to make cuts and be anywhere near the top of the leaderboard. So, Chris, is Tiger hurting his legacy by continuing to play?
No, he's not. The fact that he even won one major this year was incredible.
Yes.
And that's coming from me, and I'm not a fan. But, I mean, the fact that he was able to pull that off, and then you see how he's playing? I mean, how did he get to that level for 4 days? Because he's nowhere near that
magic,
right? The rest of the year. I mean, that Masters win may be one of the great victories of his career when it's all said and done. And you look back on it and you say, well, the guy won 80 tournaments and he won 15 majors. What was the most incredible one? The 15th one is the most incredible one so far. So I don't think he's hurting his legacy. He's still trying to play. I mean, you can say that about everybody who plays, you know, a little later on into their career in any sport. But I don't have a problem with it. He wants to still play, and he obviously won a major, as he said. It's been a good year.
Tony, what do you think?
I think this is just a little bit of what Chris said, and this is he's 43, right? Was he 43?
I believe he is.
He's getting older. And when you've had a fusion in your back and things of that nature, there are going to be days where you wake up and your body just doesn't want to get loose. And it seems like at the age of 43, that's about when that kind of stuff starts happening.
I don't remember.
I played golf this morning, and I'm complaining
about
my arm.
You know, I think he recognizes it. That's why he was just ready to go home today. He wasn't really.
He literally said, I just want to go home.
I just want to go home. Sounds like a guy whose body's sore and has had a rough 2 days, you know?
As Tony says many times, by the way, Father Time is undefeated. That's right. Keeps on winning.
Number two.
James Harden of the Rockets is already focused on next season. According to Jonathan Feagan of the Houston Chronicle, Harden is withdrawing from the United States national team that will be competing in the FIBA World Cup in China next month. The Rockets star guard is taking the time to get to know his new teammate Russell Westbrook and get everything squared away for the next year. So, Tony, I'm surprised that there's NBA players that still play on Team USA with all that's at stake. So do you think that NBA players are going to stop playing for Team USA anytime soon?
No. No. I think you have to remember where we're at in these guys' careers, right? James Harden is still relatively young, but you have to start weighing your body going into these extra long seasons. That guy like James Harden, he gets to the second round of the playoffs. They've been doing that for quite some time. You have to start kind of weighing things. And I think more than anything, what's changed the guy's perspective is, I mean, we talk about load management all the time. Now you're moving into the offseason where you'd be resting and instead you're playing more basketball. I don't think guys will stop because at the young age, you can do it. When you're 23, 24, Those are the prime times to be on the USA team.
Yeah.
And listen, the NBA's talented enough to where they're going to have guys who are willing to do it at that early age. But I think when you got superstars that move into their late 20s, early 30s, you're going to have more and more guys being almost like a flip of coin. Some guys will play, some guys won't. And that'll be based on how long they're playing into their regular season and playoffs. You just have to weigh what's more important to you. You want to get through your contract and be the type of player you know you can be. If you go to two FIBAs and an Olympics, that's time. That's mileage you're adding on. That tread comes off that tire.
Yeah, Chris,
I agree with Tony 100%. I mean, you haven't really arrived as an NBA superstar until you turn down a bid to play for the national team. then you know you've made it, right? But if I was a Houston Rockets fan, I'd be ecstatic with this news because I don't want my guys playing for Team USA. I want them, you know, resting and getting ready for another grind of an 82-game season. So I totally agree with Tony. When you're younger,
it's an
athlete, you do things for yourself more.
Right.
As you move along in your career, you tend to start thinking more about your team.
Yep.
That's pretty much the normal trajectory of things. So when you're a young player, yeah, you're all about doing everything you possibly can and, you know, playing as many games as you can for many teams as you can. But as you, you know, get on a little bit, Harden's like, wait a second, man.
I'm tired.
I got enough already with the month on my play with the Rockets here. So
I think that's the point, right, is those same guys we're talking about who turned them down, they've also already played, right? LeBron, James Harden, Russell West. These guys have all played on a USA team before. So it's not like they're turning down their one and only opportunity. They're going to get more opportunities. They've had opportunities, and they're at the point in their careers now, as Chris said, you mature and you say, you know what? I got to put my team first on this one.
Number one.
All right, very controversial. ESPN leadership reminded staffers of ESPN on Friday today that on-air talent should avoid stories considered, quote, pure politics after Dan Le Batard slammed President Trump and his own cowardly network for not allowing employees to speak out. Le Batard, whose parents are exiles from Cuba, called Wednesday's Trump rally deeply offensive because of the crowd who targeted Republican Lehan Omar, I should have looked that up, with chants of, quote, send her back, which was crazy. ESPN allows its personalities to discuss politics when they cross with sports, such as, like, skipping the White House or kneeling during the national anthem, but nothing with policy like this. So Le Batard, he went on the air and he called them out for it. Chris, you're up first. Would you do what Dan Le Batard did and go against your boss's wishes?
Only if I just signed a 2-year contract extension for $25 million a year like he just did. Then
$25 million?
Whatever he's making, oh, it's plenty. So I'm just saying, if you're emboldened with that kind of contract like Dan Le Batard is, and look, Dan Le Batard can pretty much say what he wants. I mean, he's gotten to that spot in his career. If ESPN didn't want to, you know, got so upset as to move on from Dan Le Batard, he'd have plenty of other suitors out there. So
true.
It's the position you're in. You're asking me. I would probably not. It seems that every time we go down the politics road here, we kind of run into a wall. And so yes. I don't really like going there just because I don't follow it closely enough. And I don't know that I'm intelligent enough to make a comment like Dan Le Batard made. So I'm going to say no. Yeah, whatever.
Tony, would you go against your boss's wishes if you felt strongly enough about something?
Yeah, I would. This one in particular is it's hurtful.
Scary.
It is super scary. I mean, I've been that person before. So I could.
You've been which person? I'm sorry. The person being called,
being told to go back to where you came from.
Oh, okay.
So I feel him on that, and that's something he felt strongly enough to get on air, even though he knew what the repercussions was. He missed his. They said he missed the beginning of his show today because he was eating breakfast.
Eating breakfast with the bosses.
Yeah, it's one of those breakfast meetings.
Yeah.
But something like that, I would. Just me though.
No, that's good. I'm glad you're honest. Thank you for being honest.
I think all of us would like to.
You've survived another edition of the Big Five on 97.3 The Fan.
518, Tony Gwynn Jr., Chris Ello. Cruising through on this Friday. We made it, ladies and gentlemen. We made it to the end of the week. Got about a little less than 2 more hours with Chris and I. Padres.
Yikes.
It was the first game of this 3-game set to the Cubs. Joining us now on the SDCCU Fan Hotline, Annie Halbrum, San Diego Union Tribune, as well as Fox Sports San Diego. Annie, how are you doing?
I'm good. How are you guys? Happy Friday.
Happy Friday to you as well. Not so much a happy Friday for the Pods.
Not so much.
They have another loss today. More errors plaguing this ball club. And you were on the sideline here in San Diego for that Atlanta series. What do you think is going on with the team right now?
Yeah, it's just been so weird since the All-Star break. You know, at first I thought maybe it was just kind of you know, Atlanta's a good team, and coming back from that All-Star break, maybe just taking a second to get things going again. But then when you go to Miami and you lose 2 of 3, I mean, that was one where you were kind of looking at that series going, okay, this is a chance for them to just kind of get some of their confidence back, get their mojo back, just kind of get back into that winning ways. I think that some of this is just, you know, I do think that some of it is just the growing pains of a team that is almost there but not quite there yet, yeah. You know, that is working its way there but not quite there. So I think that, you know, in a way it's good that everyone's expectations are so high. And on the other hand, it's like, wait, remember, this team wasn't even supposed to probably be in this position by the summer, or by the midsummer like this is. The one thing, though, that I think is concerning and what you hate to see is, like, if they get beat or they get put out of the wild card contention, you know, you want them to do it playing their best ball.
Right.
You know what I mean? Playing the ball that we've seen them play earlier this season. You don't want it to be on errors and on things like that. But, you know, I mean, Tony, you know, you as you've played, I mean, is there something to just kind of guys getting fatigued, guys getting just a little bit worn down and maybe just not quite as mentally focused as they were? I'm not sure, but it's very unlike them to kind of be playing with the errors that they've been playing with this last week.
And even around these guys and this team, I mean, all year and going all the way back to spring training, I mean, you don't see that this is a team that's all of a sudden lost its focus, not engaged. I mean, I don't think any of those things are happening, do you?
No, not at all. No, not at all. Like, I think, you know, these errors aren't due to, like, not engaged or not focused on winning or things like that. I don't know if some of it is just kind of maybe the young guys not quite realizing, you know, how long a full season is in the big leagues, you know, or maybe not realizing it, but just kind of getting acquainted with it, you know, that it's a long season. And even for guys like Fernando Tatis Jr. to play at this level for a full season, I think can be somewhat maybe mentally taxing during periods of time, you know. Not that they're not equipped to handle it and not that they're not going to be able to handle it, but I think some of it is just growing pains of just kind of, you know, this is where you're at, and this is what's expected of you now every night. It's not like the minors, you know. So they're more than ready for that. I just wonder if some of it is just kind of meshing together as a cohesive team, and they're definitely the team that will do that. I mean, we've seen with them how unified they are and how supportive they are of one another, and so I don't have any doubt in my mind that they will get there. I think just right now, it's just kind of like, you know, you're experiencing some of those kind of speed bumps that come along the way when you have a team that's on the rise like this.
Annie Halbrum, San Diego Union Tribune and Fox Sports San Diego, joins us here on the SDCCU Fan Hotline. Annie, let's just go back to the break, all right? Remove these last 6 or 7 games that they've played. Did you consider this team to be actually looking to be a buyer or seller, or was it more likely they stand pat? I know there's been reports out as recently as yesterday of the Padres being the lead team for Trevor Bauer out in Cleveland. Mm-hmm. I'm not so sure what these last few games has done to that, but what do you see from this team? You think they're going to be buyers or sellers?
No, it's a great question. I mean, I did speak with a team official right after that Dodgers series. And it sounded like, okay, you know, that Dodgers series kind of got a pep in everyone's step. There was a little bit of a, well, you know, coming out of the Dodgers series and into the All-Star break, kind of like a revived sense of, like, what are we going to do? You know, like, right. If the team is playing like this, we have to take consideration into being buyers or at least standing pat, you know, maybe not being sellers. So it's really interesting to look at now if they're getting their minds changed over these next few weeks, which, look, if they slip, you know, pretty far down, you kind of can't blame the Padres for trying to maybe better their team for 2020-21.
Right.
If the team is, like, just looking like it's just, you know, it's going to slip a little bit too far out of contention, and it's not, I guess, realistic at that point. But I do think that they're very open to either standing pat or being buyers, if the team was putting the thought in their head that they were going to be able to really make a run at this, and it was going to be something pretty real.
Andy Green, to me, done a pretty good job all year long. And all of a sudden, the last seven games, he can't manage, which I don't believe is the case, but I think the fans kind of do. Do you think that Andy Green, there is any kind of pressure on him as we head down the last two and a half months of this season to at least make sure this thing doesn't slip completely out of control?
I do. And listen, it's so interesting with Andy Green, because I see it on Twitter the same as you guys and hear the rumblings, and it's like, he doesn't ever catch any credit for doing something right. But man, oh man, he gets killed if he's, you know, I think the thing to remember with him is obviously he will be the first to say, you know, he still continues to grow in this role. I would think every manager across the big leagues would say that same thing. Hopefully they continue to grow every year too. But I do think, I'm sure that for him, but for anybody in this organization, as they continue to get better and as the expectations of 2020 and 2021 come through, I do think that he feels pressure, and I think that everyone feels pressure. I think it's not just him. I think it's as they get better and as these expectations come to fruition, these years come to fruition, I think that everyone feels like, okay, this is when, you know, the rubber meets the road and we're going to be judged quite heavily, you know, in these coming years. So there is that, you know, they've kind of set this expectation now as far as the players go, where if you're not pulling your weight, it seems like, you know, they're going to be more than willing to try to find someone who is for that position. And with Andy, you know, I think that it says a lot about the fact that they were 500 going into the break. And I think for him, you know, it's a matter of, I guess, whether they feel like he's the one to take them on that next step, whether they feel like he's the one that is going to get them to that next postseason step, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
But you definitely can't discount the fact that he's gotten them this far this season with a team that really, a roster that really isn't, you know, the roster that they hope to have in the coming years. There's still some holes on this roster that they've been making work, for sure.
No doubt about it. I mean, right now, the Padres are on pace to finish plus 10 from where they were a year ago. If the season, everything were to keep going as it is. So we're going to certainly find out, Andy. We appreciate you coming on. Look to get you on here again and talk some more Padre baseball. Thank you for your time.
Anytime. You guys are fantastic. I love coming on with you guys. And if nothing else, it's going to be interesting, isn't it?
So, no doubt about it. No doubt about it.
Let's bring Annie on next time during a hot streak, though.
Yeah, let's do that.
Give her a little break. Thanks, Annie.
Thanks, Annie.
All right, take care, guys. Have a good one.
That was Annie Halbrum joining us on the SDCCU Fan Hotline. SDCCU has low mortgage rate, low mortgage loan rates is what I meant to say. Equal housing opportunity. Apply
easy
now.
Easy for you to say, by the way.
At sdccu.com.
No,
it's already been played.
It's no good.
Meet our producer, Thomas.
Hi. Hello. Hi.
Thomas loves baseball. Thomas loves baseball stats.
I love this guy over here.
And Thomas is odd.
I thought he was a bit weird when he arrived.
That means it's time for Odd Baseball Stats with Odd Thomas.
We'll see about that, Posh Spice.
Let's get started, I guess, on 97.3 The Fan.
All right, we're going to get
right,
started.
Odd.
Let's go, Odd. Give us some weird baseball stuff.
All right. Last night, the San Francisco Giants won a thriller of a game in 16 innings, but the team accomplished something very odd. They used five lefty pitchers in the win. Mad Bum went 9 innings, Will Smith went 1 inning, Tony Watson 1 inning, Derek Holland 2/3 of an inning, and Williams Jerez went 2 innings. The 13 2/3 combined innings pitch were the most by any team with lefties in it since the Mariners did the same with the same amount of innings pitched in 2004.
That is weird.
2004 was the last time that lefties pitched that much in a game.
15 years ago.
That's an interesting one.
It's crazy.
Leave it to Bochy.
By the way, hats off to Mad Bum yesterday. 9 innings?
Yeah.
He got under 100 pitches through 9 innings?
Anytime somebody goes 9 innings now, I want to like jump up and down and stand and applaud.
Talking about efficiency. Jeez.
Yeah. I'm looking just at this Reds pitcher tonight, Mahle, M-A-H-L-E, Mahle, whatever his name is.
I'm sure he knows.
Anyway,
who this guy
5
is.
And a third innings, no runs, but 100 pitches.
Yeah.
So, I mean, five and a third innings. Exactly. But he hadn't given up
still
any
effective.
Runs yet.
Still right. Effective.
Effective, but not efficient.
Playing off that, it was also the first time the Giants won after trailing in the 16th inning or later since September 1st of 1958. The game also lasted 5 minutes longer than the 9-inning game in London that finished 17-13.
Wait, did you say the 16th inning?
Yes.
No wonder why nobody got past it in 1958.
That's why they hadn't lost a game since then. It was in 1958?
1958, yeah.
Right.
Definitely an odd
game.
Definitely
I remember that time
fact.
They pulled that game out. I think they were the New York... Oh, no, they were the San Francisco Giants. It was their first year in San Francisco, 1958. All right.
All right, so there have been 909 players that have hit 100 career home runs in their career, but there is only one player who had never had a multi-home run game.
Who had 100 home runs?
Yes.
Oh, very
Wait,
interesting.
Again?
All right. So there's 909 people to choose from here.
All of them have hit at least 100 career home runs.
But one
but
guy had never had a
multi-home run
game.
And there's how many guys to choose from?
909.
Come on, let's go.
That makes it harder.
Yeah, pretty hard.
Lou Piniella had 102 career home runs, but never had a multi-home run game.
Lou Piniella. That's a great trivia question. Too bad you used it there. Scraby cannot not come up with it again, but that's an interesting
one. That is an interesting
one. Speaking of multiple home run games, do you know the most home runs hit in a season that weren't hit multiple times? So single game home runs.
The guy only had single game. He never had a 200 home run game the whole season. What's
yes.
the most ever hit? That's pretty odd. I don't know. 35?
Close. Two players that did that, Mike Schmidt and Ron Kittle. Schmidt did it in 1982, and Ron Kittle did it in 1983. But Mike Piazza leads. He had 40 home runs, all single or single games in 1999.
I can see that.
Piazza had 40 games in which he had a home run, but he never hit two in one game.
Yep.
That's a pretty good record.
All right.
That's odd. It's interesting you brought up Lou Piniella, too, because Lou Piniella would have had to have appreciated what Aaron Boone did yesterday.
Speaking of Lou Piniella, our good buddy Scott Miller posted a picture today. He's out at the Hall of Fame right now. A picture of Pete Rose, Lou Piniella. Who else is really good on that Reds team?
Well, Piniella was the manager.
Tony
Kornheiser?
Peña.
Tony Kornheiser. Yes,
kidding.
He was a great player for the Reds back
kidding.
In the day. Joe Morgan?
Oh, Joe Morgan no, was the guy I was thinking of.
Tony Perez.
Perez.
Tony Perez.
Tony Perez.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. I like Lou Piniella's arguing skills. He was outstanding.
Oh, he would not have prayed to cover up home plate on
no.
you with dirt.
He would have appreciated Aaron Boone for sure.
Oh. He put Lou Piniella to shame yesterday with his
yeah.
mouthpiece.
All right. Ian Kinsler has been one of the subjects of this Padres team this season, but 10 years ago, he did something improbable, becoming the fifth player in MLB history to hit a leadoff home run and a walk-off home run in the same game.
That's pretty sweet.
Wait, who did that?
Ian Kinsler.
He had a leadoff home run. When was that?
10 years ago today.
Oh, 10 years ago today. I didn't remember that
2009.
Happening this year. 2009, he had a leadoff home run and a walk-off home run in the same game. He's the only guy ever to do that.
Yep.
I'll have to congratulate him next time I see him. All right. And he'll probably walk away from me and look at me like, what are you talking about?
Give you the number one sign again.
No, Ian Kinsler would not do that. Don't say that about Ian. Come on, man.
All right. We talked about Barry Bonds yesterday and how his skill set was just amazing during his time. But in his 2,444 plate appearances from 2001 to 2004, he was intentionally walked 284 times more than he struck out. Or he was intentionally walked 284 times, but struck out only 239 times.
So when I tell you guys that Barry Bonds was the truth, and just put aside him being a jerk from time to time, and you know the PED part. he was
and all the rest of that stuff.
He was really, really good. Like there isn't. I remember talking to my dad about this. He was like, I don't know that there's a better hitter that he's ever seen.
Actually, I was thinking about this last night. Your dad and Barry Bonds, did they get along?
Yeah. Because
they were such
great
hitters?
They did get along.
Did they ever like share trade secrets?
They did. You know what's funny is they were saying the same thing about hitting, but they thought about it completely different. You hear my dad talk about the bottom hand all the time. Take the knob to the ball. Barry was a top hand guy. He taught about catching the ball with his top hand. Same thing. It's really the same exact thing.
It is.
Just different ways to get there.
I know your dad always talked about the knob to the ball.
Right.
But I don't think any of us could do that.
That's how he thought of it. Barry thought about catching the ball with his top hand. I don't think many of us could do that. That's also why they were some of the best hitters ever to do it.
All right, so Christian Yelich is having a remarkable season, and again, he's currently tied.
Didn't impress Odd Thomas. He just went right on.
Kept it moving.
Like, yeah. All right, really great.
That's
right.
Great.
Moving on.
None Christian of them wore Yelich. Red Sox jersey, so it doesn't right. matter.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
None of them are like the Ice Princess or whatever that guy's name is. What's that guy's name?
The Ice Princess is his name now. No, the Ice Horse.
Ice Horse.
Ice Horse.
Oh. But that was amazing.
Michael right. Chavez, the Ice Princess. That's the Red Sox for
oh.
you.
Whew. All right, so Christian Yelich is having a remarkable season again, and he's currently tied with Cody Bellinger with 34 home runs on the season. But of those 24 home runs, they've all come at Miller Park. Only Richie Sexton with 28 in 2001, and Tony's guy, Prince Fielders, 27 in 2007, have had more in a single season at Miller Park.
I think Prince ended with 50 that year, I think, in 2007.
So he's got 24 of his 34 have been at home.
Yep.
That's pretty odd. Odd.
And it's only middle of July.
Yeah, not if you
yeah,
play,
he's gonna break
not if you played in Milwaukee before. The ball is just...
It jumps out of that ballpark.
It's good
seems
hitting there.
To.
It does.
Seems to.
It is. It's good hitting there.
All right. Here is my... this one's going to hit you.
This Florio. Is the oddest
is this
fact
one going to hit us right here?
Mm-hmm.
Wait a second. Can we get a little... Do we have a drum roll for this one? This sounds really good.
I know we have... Oh, here it is.
All right. The oddest fact of the week.
That's him rubbing his hand. Wait, hold on.
Tonight, Patrick Corbin will pitch for the Nationals, throwing to Yan Gomes. Both are celebrating their birthday. It'll be the second game since 1900 played on the birthdays of two starting battery mates joining Dave Hillman and Jim Fancing of the Cubs in 1957.
That is pretty good.
Who in the world looked that one up?
That is a good odd fact right there. Give it up for Odd Thomas,
well
ladies and
done,
gentlemen.
Odd Thomas.
Patrick, showtime!
That was sweet. Patrick Corbin pitched 5 innings tonight to his birthday mate, Yan Gomes. And allowed 2 runs. Nationals are trailing the Braves 2-1. But that's an amazing fact. So it's both their birthdays today, and it's only the second time in the history of the game?
Since 1900.
Wow. Yeah.
Wow.
Since 1900. Wow. All right.
Wow.
So yesterday was Denelson Lamet's birthday, but unfortunately, the catcher, they couldn't find a catcher to catch him who had yesterday's
birthday.
Yeah. They were searching, the Padres were. They wanted to get into the record book, so they couldn't make it.
Oh, I can tell this one. Mookie Betts, first Red Sox player to score a run in 13.
Of course. Of course.
Since Ted Williams.
I love that you turned his mic off.
I was quick on that button.
He tried to sneak in a Red Sox fact. Yeah, ain't that something?
They didn't make it.
Good job, Thomas.
You have to be a little slicker than that, Thomas.
I was like, I could throw this one in, too. Mookie Betts had to...
Done. As soon as he said Mookie Betts,
you were just... That was good. Good stuff. Good job, Thomas.
What's the first baseman's nickname again?
The Ice Horse.
No, the other one.
Mitchie Fourbags?
Oh, Mitchie Fourbags.
You just sound like such a goof when you say that. I love it.
He sounds like a Bostonite.
Yeah.
Benny Biceps.
Who's that again?
Andrew Benintendi.
Are you only one who uses these nicknames, or does the, like is that? Are
so
they
if you went to a Red Sox
in,
game and you're like,
Boston.
"Come on, Benny Bison," everybody would be like, "Yeah!"
I'm sure there's a lot of Section 10 podcast fans.
Oh wow, Section 10 podcast. What's that?
It's
sorry,
one of,
I'm not
one of the beat writers for the Red Sox. Jared Carrabas is.
And you listen to
podcast.
This? How often?
Every
weekly.
Day, twice a week, three
weekly.
Times a week,
once a week.
Hmm.
Yeah.
And how do you get your Patriots fix every week? Is there a Section 20 Patriots podcast you can do?
No, I actually haven't dived that far into a Patriot podcast. I have my NFL ones, my fantasy ones.
Okay.
We're good.
All right. You're odd, but that's why you're
We're proving
on the show.
Why we named the segment.
Yeah. No, those are good facts today. Good stuff, Odd Thomas. I think that was the best one you've ever delivered. Scravy, what are we doing after the break here?